Today's episode is sponsored in part by Modern Mammals, creators of a new hair washing product for men. You can help support Based on a True Story when you use the code BOATSPODCAST at modernmammals.com for 10% off. I've really been enjoying their shampoo light bar as an alternative to traditional shampoo. And I know it's in the name, but honestly, when I first used it, I was surprised at just how light and airy it feels. It reminds me of using a bar of soap for your hair, except it's even better than that because if you're like me, you don't like the residue that some actual bars of soap leave behind. And the shampoo light bar is easy to wash out without leaving any residue behind. Modern Mammals also focuses on creating products that help you keep your hair's natural oils so it's not left feeling poofy and frizzy. Go to modernmammals.com and use code BOATSPODCAST for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code BOATSPODCAST. Don't forget to use the promo code BOATSPODCAST so they know I sent you. Thanks, Modern Mammals. Okay, let's start today's episode. Hello, and welcome to Based on a True Story, the podcast that compares your favorite Hollywood movies with history. In this episode of Boats This Week, we'll look at how movies depicted historical events that happened between June 5th to June 11th. Let's get into it. June 4th, 1944, England. Wait, what? I just mentioned this week is June 5th through the 14th. Why are we starting on June 4th? Don't worry, we'll find out in a minute. This film is in black and white. A clock sitting above the mantel gives a time of 9:35. In front of it stands Henry Grace's version of General Dwight D. Eisenhower. He's listening as someone off camera is saying that the current conditions almost resemble midwinter. Eisenhower moves and the camera follows him. Now we can see there are other men in the room as well. It looks like 17 men are in the room. At least that's what's visible at any one time. That includes Eisenhower, who sits down at a long table. Everyone is wearing military uniforms. This must be a high-level conference of some sort. The man standing at the head of the table continues to address Eisenhower, but also everyone else in the room as they all listen to him intently as he says they can expect a brief period of fair conditions. Another man points out the conditions will be far below the minimum requirements. Eisenhower thanks them for the report, and the man at the head of the table leaves, along with a couple of others behind him. After they're gone, Eisenhower turns to the others at the table and says, "They've already postponed the attack once." He asks for their advice. Trevor Reed's character, General Montgomery, says they should go. Another man points out that the American convoys for Omaha and Utah beaches have the furthest to go, so they have to be given the order in the next 30 minutes. The clock on the mantle behind Eisenhower is hard to read now, but it doesn't look much later than 9:35 or 9:36. Another man in the room says the longer they wait, the more of a security problem it'll be. He goes on to say that the next time the tides and the moon will be right. A brief pause as he looks at the piece of paper in front of him. Not before July. Eisenhower ponders the decision for a while longer. The camera cuts away for a while to another scene of some German officers before coming back to Eisenhower, and he's made the decision. He tells the men in the room, "I'm quite positive we must give the order. I don't like it, but there it is. I don't see how we can possibly do anything else but go." This scene comes from the 1962 film called The Longest Day, and it's showing an event that happened this week in history when General Dwight D. Eisenhower made the decision to proceed with Operation Overlord, or as we more commonly know it today, D-Day. While the specifics of the conversations that we saw in the movie to make this decision were fictionalized, the basic idea is true. By that, what I mean is that there really was a weather delay. Eisenhower, who was appointed as the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe in December of 1943, was put in charge of the Allied invasion of Northwestern Europe, Operation Overlord. After plenty of planning that we don't ever really see in the movie, the first date suggested was May 1st, 1944. But they needed to postpone to get extra landing craft because they decided to launch with five divisions instead of three. Other dates were suggested: May 21st through May 23rd, June 1st As the date got closer on May 17th, Eisenhower picked the date of June 5th, 1944, as the day for the invasion. But just like we do see in the movie, there was bad weather that delayed the invasion. And similar to what we see in the movie, Eisenhower kept a close eye on the weather thanks to his meteorologist. We hear Eisenhower in the movie mentioning the name Stack, and it is correct to do so. While the movie leaves the meteorologist from this scene uncredited, in reality, his name is Group Commander James Stagg from the Royal Air Force, and he was portrayed by Patrick Barr in the movie. The movie never names the two men with Stagg, but maybe one of them was Colonel Donald Yates. He was Stagg's deputy from the United States Army Air Forces. The Air Force was not its own branch in the military yet. They also worked with some other meteorologists, though. So the basic point is the movie was correct to show that Stagg was not the only meteorologist. But it is true that Stagg served as the chief weather forecaster for General Eisenhower as he considered the launch of the invasion. The movie's mention of a full moon and tides was certainly a consideration, too, although there's obviously more to the story than just the brief mention that we see in the film. They wanted to have the landing vehicles hit the beaches just before dawn because that would be right between high and low tide. The primary reason for that was so that they could see the obstacles on the beaches. While we don't see it in the scene that I described earlier, you've probably seen those before. They look kind of like metal crosses. We'll learn more about those later. And it's not like they were the only obstacles in place, but they wanted to time the landing so anything the enemy had set up could be seen earlier. So not high tide, but also not low tide to minimize the amount of time that the men would be exposed on the beaches. A full moon was also important so the aircraft pilots could see better. So all in all, it was more important than just whether or not it would be raining. In fact, the tidal weather was more of a determining factor for when the operation was to unfold. But of course, clear conditions would help with visibility too, so things had to be just right. And this is where the movie is a little confusing with the timeline. At the beginning of this segment, I said it was June 4th. And the reason for that is because we know from history, there were two meetings held on the evening of June 4th. One was at 1715 or 5:15 p.m. And the other was held a few hours later at 2100 hours or 9 p.m. The prediction for the weather was to have a gap in the bad weather coming up. Since we see the clock in the movie being a little past 9:30, that's why I'm assuming that this meeting in the movie is on June 4th. Also, the line of dialogue we see in the movie where Henry Grace's version of Eisenhower saying, "I'm quite positive we must give the order." I don't like it, but there it is. I don't see how we can possibly do anything else. Well, that quote comes from Admiral Ramsey, who was there and later wrote down that's what Eisenhower said in making his decision that night. So why are we talking about this meeting the movie shows on June 4th for the week starting June 5th? Well, simply because this meeting on June 4th, it did happen, but it was not when the final decision was made for when Operation Overlord would launch. You see, after Eisenhower made the decision on June 4th, they met up again in the early morning hours of June 5th, just to double check the weather. Eisenhower later wrote that outside the wind was, quote, of almost hurricane proportions, end quote. But inside the meeting, Stagg told Eisenhower that nothing had changed since the previous night. They still predicted a break in the weather for the next day. At 4:15 a.m., Eisenhower said, okay, we'll go. And with that, the largest seaborne invasion in human history was on for June 6th, 1944. Oh, and something else we don't see in the movie was the intelligence that aided in the decision. It was more than just the weather, of course. Bletchley Park was key in that. And one source I saw suggested that just before making the final decision in the morning hours of June 5th, Eisenhower had received a report from Bletchley that the Germans were aware of an imminent attack. But if you want to watch this meeting take place, check out the 1962 film, The Longest Day. And Eisenhower's meeting starts at about 32 minutes and 50 seconds into the movie. Once you watch that, you can learn more about the true story with historian and author Marty Morgan on episode number 134 of Based on a True Story. As I'm recording this right now, on the other side of my door is my cat. He's always wherever I am as I'm working on the podcast. He watches all the movies with me, and he lets me know when it's time to stop working by sitting on my keyboard. I love the little guy. And as a pet owner, that means there are expenses like vet bills that can pop up, and sometimes it's unexpected. That's why I was happy to learn about today's sponsor, EarnIn, because they can help make sure that I've got the money to cover those unexpected vet bills. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Now you can join over 3.5 million customers. Get the peace of mind that comes with EarnIn. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in True Story under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. True Story under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Thanks, EarnIn. June 6th, 1944, Normandy, France. For our next event, we're staying in the same movie. We're just moving a little further ahead in the timeline. The dark sky is filled with planes flying overhead. And it's dark not just because the movie is black and white, but we can tell it's nighttime. Actually, we get the time with some text on the screen. It says, Normandy, British glider assault, Orne River, 0011 hours. That means it's 12:11 a.m. and June 6th is just 11 minutes old. The pilot looks back at the men in the back of the plane and tells Major Howard that the release point is coming up. Howard, who's played by Richard Todd in the movie, gives a thumbs up to the pilot and tells his men to get ready for landing. They cut loose, and through the front window, we can see the plane towing them veer off to the right while they continue going straight. The sound of the plane's engines can be heard disappearing as any mechanical noises go away. All we can hear now are the soldiers putting on their camouflaged helmets and getting their gear ready. There's a little more text on the screen to tell us that the commander is Major John Howard of the British 6th Airborne Infantry. He seems deep in thought. We can hear voiceover of what we can only assume is his commanding officer giving him the orders. To paraphrase, we find out that their orders are to capture the Orne River Bridge before the enemy can destroy it. The voiceover explains the bridge is a vital artery that has been rigged for explosion by the enemy, and to make things more difficult, the gliders are going to land at night without the benefit of ground support. You will assault the garrison, overwhelm it, and hold until relieved. That last part repeats in Howard's mind. Hold until relieved. You can almost see the question in the expression on his face. How long will that be? But he doesn't actually say anything. Instead, this train of thought is broken by the pilot who tells them the bridge is coming up. We can see the bridge out the window. It's still silent as the gliders turn and everyone braces for the landing. The silence is broken the moment the gliders hit the ground. There's the terrible sound of scratching and scraping as the bottom of the glider hits brush, fence, and anything else that might be in its way until it finally comes to a halt. As I mentioned to start this event, this is the same movie as our last one, 1962's The Longest Day. The event I just described being shown in the movie takes place soon after Eisenhower made the decision that Operation Overlord was a go. That set in motion a number of smaller operations, way too many to name here. One of the first was called Operation Tonga, which is what the movie scene I just talked about is showing. The movie was correct to show that it was the British 6th Airborne Division involved in Operation Tonga, and Richard Todd's character in the movie, Major John Howard, was based on a real person. As a fun little fact, the actor, Richard Todd, was himself a part of the 6th Airborne Division. He actually participated in Operation Tonga. That's where the real Richard Todd met the real John Howard on the bridge in Normandy. Since the movie shows the gliders and planes already in the air, what we don't see is that it was just before midnight on June 5th, 1944, that the Airspeed Horsa gliders towed behind the Hanley Page Halifax heavy bombers left from RAF Tarrant Rushton Airfield in southern England. Their mission was a little more in-depth than what we see Todd's version of Major Howard repeating in his head in the movie. By that, what I mean is the movie mentions capturing the Orne River Bridge. And the true story, that was just part of the tasks the 6th had to do that morning. They had to capture two bridges, the one on the Orne River that the movie mentions, but also the nearby Pegasus Bridge over the Caen Canal. That's the one the real Major Howard was commanded to take. That's also where Howard and Todd met. Although in the middle of D-Day, I'm sure they had no idea that Todd would be portraying Howard in a movie after the war. So capturing those bridges were one task. The 6th Airborne was also tasked with destroying some other bridges over another nearby river, the Dive. They were also tasked with taking out a gun battery nearby. That was the Merville Battery, and it was targeted at Sword Beach, some 8 miles or almost 13 kilometers away. That's not shown in the movie, but it was vital to the success of soldiers landing on Sword Beach that this fortified artillery position was stopped. When it was over, Operation Tonga was a success, despite suffering about 800 casualties of the overall 8,500 men who had been deployed in the operation. If you want to watch Operation Tonga in the movie, it starts at about 50 minutes into the 1962 film, The Longest Day. But, of course, The Longest Day is not the only movie or TV series to talk about the paratroopers taking part on D-Day. The primary reason I picked this one to chat about is because when the first horse of gliders of Operation Tonga landed, they were the first Allied troops to touch French soil on D-Day. But there were others. We learned that there were about 8,500 paratroopers in Tonga, but overall, there were about 18,000 Allied paratroopers dropped during the D-Day operations. There was the British 6th Airborne, some Canadian paratroopers, the American 82nd, and perhaps the most popular, the American 101st Airborne. That's the division highlighted in the HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, who we also see being dropped behind enemy lines on D-Day. So in addition to episode number 134 of Based on a True Story, where we learned about The Longest Day, you may also be interested in a super deep dive into the historical accuracy of Band of Brothers that you can find over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com/Band of Brothers. Those are all episodes where I had chats with historian Marty Morgan, who, as a fun little fact, was also the historical consultant on the 2021 video game Call of Duty Vanguard, which has a mission where you can play as a British paratrooper taking part in Operation Tonga. June 6, 1944, Normandy, France. Same date, same location, but this time the movie we're watching is in color. It's also light outside now as the night has subsided. The sound of waves can be heard crashing on the beach as we see it splashing around metal structures stuck in the sand. Text on the screen tells us that this is June 6th, 1944, and we're at Dog Green Sector, Omaha Beach. The camera cuts to landing vehicles as they speed along the water, bouncing up and down and splashing the soldiers inside as they do. Tom Hanks' character, Captain Miller, takes a drink from his canteen. We can see his hand is shaking uncontrollably, as if he's nervous about what's to come. A couple other soldiers retch in the bottom of the vehicle. The vehicle's operator calls out to the men, "Clear the ramp, 30 seconds. God be with you." Captain Miller barks out orders to his men for what they're to do as soon as the ramp drops. A few more seconds of water splashing and the sound of explosions are getting closer. Then, as the ramp drops, bullets whiz inside, killing some of the men. The camera cuts to the angle from the machine gun positions as we see it mowing the men down in one of the landing vehicles. We can also see there are a lot of other landing vehicles, too. The machine guns aren't hitting all of them like that. There are also machine gun setups, though. Soldiers start pouring out of the landing vehicles. Some jump over the side instead of going out front. From underwater, we can see soldiers and equipment dropping into the water. Every so often, the path of a bullet can be seen as it goes through the water. Some of them hit soldiers underwater, changing the blue water to red. We can see other soldiers struggling to get their equipment off. Some don't make it before running out of air and they sink to the bottom. Others do, and we can see soldiers emerging out of the water and onto the beach. The sound of gunfire that was muffled underwater becomes louder as we're above the water now, and the camera pans the beach as soldiers are slowly making their way onto the wet sand. Gunshots and explosions continue at a fierce pace, hitting many of the soldiers trying to make their way out of the water. The camera switches back to being from the perspective of the machine guns shooting at the soldiers on the beach. It's a scene of pure chaos with explosions throwing sand high into the air. Machine guns kick up sand and water. Soldiers rushing from the vehicles trying to use the metal structures in the sand as cover. Bodies litter the beaches and float in the water just beyond. More and more soldiers keep coming, and slowly the invading forces make their way onto the sand. This is how the 1998 movie Saving Private Ryan begins as we get transported to the D-Day landings on the Normandy beaches. Well, sort of. While the depiction to open the film has become something that many movie viewers just assumed that's what it was like for everyone who landed on the beaches of Normandy that day, and for some it was, But that's not what it was like for everyone. Actually, instead of my explaining this, let's learn from someone much more knowledgeable than I am. At the end of our last segment, I mentioned the historian Marty Morgan, and I also had a chat with him about Saving Private Ryan, and I asked him about that opening scene. Here is an excerpt from that discussion. Can you give us a little more insight into the location that we get in the movie of Don Green Sector, Omaha Beach, and these moments up until landing on the beach?
Yeah, what they're depicting is the moment of the greatest intensity during the battle for Omaha Beach. I would just mention that Omaha Beach, it was really six separate battles, each battle functioning separate and almost entirely autonomous and disconnected from one another for the first half of the day on D-Day. And what the screenplay writer in the movie did was he chose the battle that provided the greatest amount of drama, because the U.S. Army's 5th Corps landings in the dark green sector of Omaha Beach, and those are landings primarily carried out by two battalions of the 29th Infantry Division, and then with a few Rangers thrown in. That is where the entire assault goes entirely wrong. The historical quote that I think most effectively communicates how bad it was there is what happens to A Company of the 116th Infantry Regiment of the 29th Division. A Company landed with 164 officers and men, and within 5 minutes of combat in front of the German resistance master bunker complex at Dark Green Sector, they had suffered 91 killed and 65 wounded. So that literally in the span of 5 minutes, an entire infantry company was reduced to complete ineffectiveness. And that's a significant detail because the first wave at Omaha Beach consisted of 9 infantry companies spread out over the entire length of the beach. And Omaha Beach is 5 miles wide. Out of the 9 infantry companies that conducted that preliminary assault, one of them is destroyed entirely in front of the defenses at Dark Green Sector. When discussing the movie Saving Private Ryan, you can go just a few hundred meters to the east down the length of Omaha Beach, where you're encountering U.S. troops that are landing first waves, and they're receiving a little bit of harassing fire at long ranges to where the fire is not entirely effective. In other words, you had Americans that landed that were just a few hundred meters to the east of Dog Green Sector, and almost everyone gets out of the landing craft, gets through the beach obstacles and makes it to this thing called the shingle with light casualties. That stands in strong contrast to what happens at Dark Green Sector, which is, of course, what's depicted in the opening scene of the movie, where you have effectively cataclysmic casualties.
Yeah, the impression I got was that was essentially what was going on everywhere, because, of course, that's the only thing that we see is this just mass rain of fire as these people are getting out of the landing vehicles. And so I just assumed that was happening everywhere on the beach, but it sounds like very, very different experiences.
That's absolutely correct, because the movie will lead you to the impression that it was a 5 mile wide slaughterhouse, and it simply was not that. It just wasn't that at all.
Before we wrap up this segment today, though, let's learn about Czechoslovakian hedgehogs. I know how that sounds. But remember when I mentioned the obstacles on the beach? In the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, we see the metal structures that look like metal crosses. They're all over the beach in what seems to be a rather random order, and they provide some form of cover for the soldiers landing. The nickname for those are Czech hedgehogs because they were invented in Czechoslovakia as a way of keeping the Germans out of their land in the 1930s. That didn't work, and Germany annexed Czechoslovakia anyway, but the hedgehogs were supposed to keep tanks and vehicles from crossing them. Think of it kind of like how barbed wire can help keep people out of a line more than just regular fence. That's what hedgehogs can do for tanks and vehicles. If you try to drive over that, you get stuck on it. Or with some of them being placed further into the water when there was high tide, it might get ships or landing vehicles stuck onto it. That doesn't make it impossible to cross the line, of course, but they're also not designed to be used alone. And they're not really thrown on the beach haphazardly. They were placed to try and direct vehicles and men to positions where machine guns and artillery were targeted, the kill zones. They'd also use them in conjunction with mines and other things to form an overall defensive line known as the Atlantic Wall. Oh, and as a fun little fact, after the Allies secured the beaches of Normandy, they actually cut up the hedgehogs and welded the metal to their tanks to add extra armor to them. If you want to watch the D-Day invasion, check out the opening sequence of the movie Saving Private Ryan. And you can hear the rest of my interview with Marty Morgan about the historical accuracy of that movie on episode number 159 of Based on a True Story. And as you've probably guessed by all our movies today being about D-Day, it's such a major event in history that there have been a lot of movies and TV shows covering it. I already mentioned Band of Brothers, which shows D-Day in the second episode. So between The Longest Day, Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, those are probably some of the most popular depictions of D-Day. But if you're looking for a movie that maybe you haven't heard of yet, there are some others, like 1956's D-Day, the 6th of June. Richard Todd is an actor in that one, too. Or there's 1968's Where Eagles Dare, or 1975's Overlord, or 1980's The Big Red One, or 2004's Ike, Countdown to D-Day, or 2010's Storming Juno, and plenty more. My final recommendation is not really a movie, but a documentary. Just a few days ago, we talked to George Stevens Jr., and if you remember, his father landed on the beaches of Normandy on D-Day and shot a bunch of footage there and beyond that as well as the Allies advanced into Europe. George Stevens Jr. cut together his father's footage into an excellent documentary called George Stevens, D-Day to Berlin. And if you have another one to suggest, let us know in the Based on a True Story Discord. This episode of Based on a True Story this week was written and produced by me, Dan LeFebvre. If you're still looking for some historical recommendations for things to watch, maybe that are not centered around D-Day, here are a few birthdays of people who have been mentioned in movies or TV shows. We talked a lot about June 6th today, and it was also on June 6th, but back in 1755, that Nathan Hale was born in Coventry, Connecticut. Back then, it was a British colony, and Nathan Hale was best known for his role in the American Revolution, as well as his final words when he was executed by the British as a spy. Those words have varied a little bit based on the source, but the commonly accepted version is that they were, quote, "I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country," end quote. You can see Nathan Hale portrayed by Jeff Huth in the 2014 series called Turn, Washington Spies. And we covered that on the podcast back on episode number 139 of Based on a True Story. On June 7th, 1848, Paul Gauguin was born in Paris, France. He was a painter, but perhaps best known for his friendship with Vincent van Gogh. He's portrayed on screen by Oscar Isaac in the 2018 film about Van Gogh called At Eternity's Gate. And we covered that with the Pulitzer Prize-winning biographer Stephen Nafee on episode number 193 of Based on a True Story. And to end things on a bit of a lighter note today, it was on June 9th, 1934, that Donald Duck was born. Well, as much as a cartoon character can be born. His first appearance in a movie was called The Wise Little Hen, where he was voiced by Clarence Nash. As a fun little fact about that, Nash happened upon Disney Studios in 1932 and decided to leave his info with the receptionist. Disney saw it and remembered the name from a radio show that Nash had done a few days earlier. He was called in to audition, got the part, and ended up being the voice of Donald Duck for the next 51 years. So if you're ever wondering whether or not you should go ahead and try for that job, just go for it. You never know what'll happen. So, to recap, today we learned a lot about D-Day movies and TV series, including 1962's The Longest Day, 1998's Saving Private Ryan, 2001's Band of Brothers, as well as 1956's D-Day, the 6th of June, 1968's Where Eagles Dare, 1975's Overlord, 1980's The Big Red One, 2004's Ike, Countdown to D-Day, 2010's Storming June, and while not a movie or TV series, we also got a brief mention of Operation Tonga in the video game Call of Duty Vanguard. In our birthday segment, we also got some additional recommendations like 2014's Turn, Washington Spies, 2018's At Eternity's Gate. And last but certainly not least, if you're looking for something super light as a break from all the war, this is a great week to watch some Donald Duck cartoons in honor of his first theatrical appearance. If you check out any of those this week, or if you just want to chat about any of your favorite movies and history, you can join the Based on a True Story Discord community to let me know what you think. And if you're getting some value out of Based on a True Story, giving some of that value back helps keep the show alive. You can give back whatever you feel it's worth, whether it's a dollar, $10, $100, whatever value you get out of the show. You can give back and learn how to get ad-free versions of the show over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com/support. Until next time, thanks so much for listening, and I'll chat with you again really soon.